This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, a look at computers. Today we welcome back to the show science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg writes a couple of columns for the newspaper in addition to his reporting work about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuits section of the paper. One a question and answer column, the other a column featuring useful and interesting websites. And this topic, computers, a topic we take up once a month on the third Monday of the month. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a telephone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Okay, we've already got a listener who would like to talk with you, so let's go and take this call. A listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. I have been running both SpyBot and AdAware, the free versions, based on suggestions from previous programs. But I've been running, and I'm still running SpyBot, but now the free AdAware would keep saying things like, You can't update with this version anymore. So when I updated to the newest version, it ran very, very slowly, and it would come up every day with the same problems, nothing new. And then when I sort of search around on the web for other comments, people were saying, well, plus in that program, they're actually looking at things on your computer anyway during that time. So my question is there any substitute for AdAware that I could run in conjunction with SpyBot, or what are your current recommendations for types of things to be running?
Well, another one you might look into, and now it's slipping my mind as to whether they have a free version, but there may be a little cost, is Spy Sweeper. That's another big one, right?
Okay.
You know, Microsoft also has some tools now that do that kind of thing. And some of your antivirus vendors like Symantec with Norton and McAfee, they also are including, you know, spyware and adware sweeping things in their utilities. So those are some options. Let me make a suggestion with reference to AdAware, okay,
mm-hmm.
because I'm using the new version as well, and I haven't notice the speed problem. I don't think it's the easy to use program that it was before. They've kind of prettied it up and complicated it in its interface in the process, I think. But I haven't had any problem, you know, running it with the decent speed on what is not even on a laptop that's really not, you know, it's a few years old now.
Uh-huh.
And was a compact laptop with a slower chip to extend battery life to begin with. So what I'd suggest in that case is what you might want to do is just uninstall AdAware completely, okay? As I recall, it's got an uninstall function. Yeah, just get it out of there completely and then download the new free version and install it and see if that helps.
Okay. Now, is it still recommended to use something like AdAware and SpyBot?
Well, yeah, I always tell people you probably want to use a couple of spyware, adware utilities because they generally don't conflict with each other, unlike, you know, antivirus utilities, for example, or in some cases firewalls. You know, if you have two of those on your computer, you can run into problems. But generally, you know, spyware, adware, sweepers don't conflict with each other, and they tend to catch they tend to catch things that the other doesn't, right?
Okay.
So spyware or SpyBot's great at catching certain things, and then adware is great at catching certain other things, and sometimes there's a no man's land there where they don't overlap, you know.
Okay, now one more quick question. Is there any virtue in the paid versions for just the regular user?
No, I don't really think so in either of those cases. If you do tons and tons and tons of web surfing and you do maybe a lot of downloading and a lot of multimedia interactive stuff on the web. Maybe you want to think about, you know, those paid versions for the kind of extra protective features. Usually what you get, there is no paid version of SpyBot, it's just free.
Right.
But usually what you get with a paid version of something is more automation, so that, you know, you don't have to think about running a scan yourself, and it's always there watching things going on to protect you.
Uh-huh.
So those are the advantages you get out of that. But, you know, if you're just a normal user,
right,
and you're, you know, regular about running scans, then you should be okay with the free versions.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
You're welcome. Other questions are invited this afternoon about computers. Greg Klein is with us this afternoon. He's on the Science and Technology Beat at the News Gazette. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, what do you say we talk about Vista Service Pack number one?
Well, it's kind of, you know, whenever Microsoft releases a new version of Windows, the wait then comes for the first service pack, you know, which is the first big collection of bug fixes and sometimes feature enhancements that comes down the pike for that version of Windows. Off and on again at this point, they've released the first service pack for Windows Vista. It doesn't do much as far as extending features. What it basically does is collect all the bug fixes that Microsoft has released since it released Vista into one fell swoop, and it makes some internal improvements that are supposed to help with maybe what is the biggest problem with Vista, and that's that it tends to run slowly, even on, you know, machines that are fairly modern with plenty of resources. Now, it doesn't, from what I'm hearing from people, doesn't always do that. Some people it has done that for, it's also, you know, created some problems for people with peripheral devices, particularly devices you might plug into your USB ports, and there are still some conflicts with software that hasn't been massaged by the software's manufacturers or writers for Vista yet. But all in all, it's probably something you want to think about. You may already have it if you've got automatic update turned on for Windows. It may have already been fed to you. Or maybe not, because Microsoft's had it out and then pulled it to fix some things and had it out again. So, but you may already have it, and if not, it's something you might want to think about. Do a little research, Google searching on your particular system to see, you know, if there have been any conflicts with it first. With the XP service packs, they always made a CD available as well as making it available as a download. I think they've done the same thing with Vista SP1. And I kind of prefer to get the CD myself so that you have it there and you can lay it back over if you've got to do a reinstall of the system or something of that nature. But, you know, it's kind of that's just a preference on my part, and it's they're six of one, half a dozen of the other, basically.
Yeah.
So, but it is something you know, these service packs are generally something, particularly after when the operating system first comes out and it's a 0.0 version. I say don't mess around with it. Wait until they issue some fixes and it's a 0.3, 0.4, 0.5 version. And then the next step after that is these service packs, and generally you want to install those, particularly because, you know, some of those those bug fixes, so to speak, that they're packaging are security measures that can be important to you. Now, if you've kept up all the way along with updating Vista, then maybe you're not that worried about it at this point, and you can wait for Service Pack 2.
Okay, very good. Let's talk with another listener. We go next to a caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. I've been having a lot of trouble with Microsoft Word in that every time I save something I've written in Microsoft Word, I get tons of Word work files plastering my desktop, and it doesn't tell me what it is, you know. So I have, in order to find out, you know, what it is actually that's there, I have to look it up, and it's a mess, and I don't know what to do about it.
So you make a file in Word, so you're
making
a document. You write a document, and you save that.
Right.
And then what does it save on your desktop, ma'am?
It says Word work file L1790, Word work file L2814, Word work file L1502.
And you get multiples of this every time?
Multiples of this.
And
not multiples of so much of each work file, although I get that, but continuous numbers of work files that have no other identifying indication aside from these strange numbers.
And when have you tried to open up any of those files?
Sure.
What do you see?
Oh, I get what I'm working on. I mean, that part of it is not so much a problem,
mm-hmm.
Except that it's not clear to me exactly when this was done. It isn't clear what the what version it is.
Mm-hmm. So, and you get multiple versions of the same.
I get multiple versions of them as well. Yes.
And your final document, the document I assume you've given a name, not the cryptic number, does it end up where you want it to go, I assume, in My Documents?
It generally ends up where I want it to go, but I also get multiple copies of that, up to 13 or, 12. Do I ever get 13? No, it's mostly one up through 12, but it makes a mess out of my desktop, and since so many of them are in a sense anonymous, I worry about deleting them before I look at them.
Mm-hmm. So, I want you to email me about this because I don't have an answer right off the top of my head.
Okay, yes,
but
I'd be glad to.
It's a very interesting question and kind of an interesting problem that I'd be happy to look further into.
That would be, how would I do that?
And my email is Kline, KLINE, at news-gazette.com.
Just a minute.
And if you'll do that,
I would be glad to.
I will. I'll see what I can come up with. Now, off the top of my head, I've never actually heard of a problem like this.
Sorry.
Off the top of my head, I think for some reason, what you're seeing is either temporary files that Word makes as you're in the process.
Yes,
okay?
I think that's it. Yeah.
Or you're seeing versions.
Yep.
Because Word has a version function. So for some reason, those are appearing, out front where they shouldn't be, and cluttering your desktop. So we can find out what the reason for that is.
That would be very nice. And so yes, I'll do that. And thank you very much.
And ma'am.
Yes.
One other thing. What version of Word are you using there? Is it 2003?
Do you know? I'm not sure that I know.
Okay,
if you could tell me how to find out.
Well, if when you've got Word open,
I've got it open.
You
go above.
You should see under help about Word, probably.
Yeah, it's sorry, it's it doesn't say what version it is.
Well, you try to determine that, and when you email me,
yes,
include
I'll do that.
Include
All
that
right.
information.
And thank you very much.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, bye.
Next, we talk with a listener on line two in Champaign. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
I got a question. I want to confirm something. I have a laptop with Windows Vista Basic that automatically searches for updates and so on and so forth. And a couple weeks or so ago, I was doing an update, and I don't remember exactly how it was worded, but it told me I didn't need Service Pack 1. Now, could that be correct because of the fact I have been getting regular weekly updates?
Yes, that sir, could in fact be correct because, you know, Service Pack 1 really doesn't add any new features. In Microsoft's words, it's, quote, the complete set of Windows Vista updates, okay, unquote. Mm-hmm. So if you've been regularly having those updates downloaded and installed automatically, you may be as up-to-date as Vista Service Pack 1 can make you.
Okay. I sort of suspected that, but now could you speak to, I've been toying with the idea, and I've tried to make this work on, my laptop and my desktop, too, of putting in a TV card.
Uh-huh.
Because I was thinking it might be interesting or, if I could make it work. I've got a nice LCD monitor and all that jazz, and it seems to have a pretty good image, but I haven't been able to make the TV cards work worth a damn and get any kind of reasonable image out of them. Mm-hmm. Is there any? Does one need, or should, if one is going to think along that line, should you probably think about investing in a purpose-built machine with a particular? I've noticed in the Sunday circulars, it seems like I think Hewitt Packard has a quad-core unmatched machines, and they all have TV tuners in them.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen how well they work?
Well, I'll just say this in general, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's still the case, even though they look the same, and, you know, my colleague at the paper who writes about consumer electronics stuff, Rich Warren, would know more about this than me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the case, even though they look the same, that there is a difference between what TVs are made for and what computer monitors are
right,
made for.
Right, that's what I suspected.
And if you try to run the computer on your flat panel TV or you try to run TV on your flat panel computer monitor, you're not going to get the kind of experience you'd get by having a purpose-built device for either thing.
Yeah.
So
okay.
You're probably better off. Now, there are reasons to put a TV card in your computer and do something like that. You know, if a kid in a dorm room or somebody in a small apartment or something like that, where you don't have the room to have all those screens around, there's some I think some sense in doing that. Or if you just spend so much time in front of your computer that you want to multitask and watch TV on the screen at the same time that you're doing your computing stuff. Then,
have you run into any problems with – I haven't got around to experimenting with this yet. I would like to hook up one of my machines to my home stereo system just so I could listen to internet radio.
Mm-hmm.
And have you noticed it seems to me that oftentimes the audio quality on those sounds kind of mechanical?
Right.
And
well,
is that a problem with my machine, or is that just the nature of the beast?
I think you're hearing more the nature of the beast.
Okay.
Now, I not only listen to radio from my computer through my stereo at times, I also have, thousands of music files, all legal, I might add, on my computer that I listen to through my home stereo. And, I wouldn't class myself as a super discerning listener, okay? You know, there are these folks that swear that there's a big difference between vinyl and CDs, for example. Well, my ears aren't good enough to hear that. But I can hear a difference between the files on my computer, even though I tend to put those files on my computer at a fairly high bit rate, fairly high quality. I do hear a difference between those and between CDs.
And I would recommend if there's a piece of music you dearly love by a particular artist, go out and buy the friggin' CD.
Right.
And hook it up to a good machine. Okay. One last thing. Perhaps if you would review with us again. backup software, how to mirror image hard drives and all that jazz. That's that's on my long honey-do list to get done sooner or later, I hope.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Do we have a minute for that?
You know what? Why don't we take, we've got one caller who's patiently waiting.
Right.
We're going to take that call, and then we'll do this review, and this will also give our listener who just called in with that question time to get to his radio and turn it back
up. That's good.
Okay. So now we're going to go, believe it or not, to a caller waiting for us on line four in Houston, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
Hello. How's the weather in Houston?
Oh, that's warm and humid, but, you know. But actually, it's a better season in the year, I think, because it's not that humid, so people can swim outside.
Good.
Yeah. Well, I just have a very simple question. One time, I accidentally downloaded some software from internet to diagnose my computer. My computer is a 2001 gateway.
Uh-huh.
And then after you finish diagnosing, say, it seemed like every driver need to be updated. So I just don't know if I want to do that. If I do that, what a kind of benefit to do that?
Well, this I'll say two things about this, ma'am. I wouldn't get software from the internet to do this kind of thing for you, okay? Because generally what they're trying to do is sell you something, right? And the second thing is, if your computer is functioning fine, you know, if you're not having problems, then you don't need to worry about that. It's if you're seeing problems, in particularly in particular areas. Let's say you got a printer that's not doing what you want it to, or you've got a sound card that's not doing what you want it to. Then you might want to think about downloading and installing the latest drivers for that. All right. Now, generally, I think you want to do that not through the kind of service I think you tapped into there. You want to do it through the manufacturer's website. So if it's your sound card you're concerned about and your sound card's, a Sound Blaster card or something else, you want to go to their website, go to their download section of that website and download the new drivers for that card and install them.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks to our listener in Houston, listening online at will.illinois.edu. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and today it's our monthly program on computers. Our guest this month, Greg Klein. He's on the Science and Technology beat at the News Gazette. Okay, so we want to review backup procedures.
Right, and this is, it's good to back up. You should be doing it. Someday you may be doing it online, but this is not that day because it's not fast enough and you don't get enough capacity for the money that you pay. Where you do get a lot of capacity is if you just buy an external hard drive. Now, you can, if you got the kind of computer that can accommodate it, a tower case where you can put another hard drive in there, you can make that an internal drive. But the easy thing to do is just get an external drive. It'll be a USB, fast USB drive probably, unless you're dealing with an Apple, and then it might be a FireWire drive. But in either case, it's just a fast method of connecting an external drive to your computer. And I like to get a drive that's as big as my internal drive. And then I like to get a piece of software that generically I'll refer to as cloning software, okay? On the Windows machines, a popular piece of software for this is Norton Ghost, for example. But there are others, some alternatives that aren't as costly as Ghost. On the Mac, I tend to use Carbon Copy Cloner, which is a free piece of cloning software. But again, there are other alternatives, some that cost or some that cost a little and some that don't cost. And all this software does is basically make a copy of your internal drive, your main hard drive, right onto that external drive. And then if you have a big problem on your internal drive, it gets all corrupted and you have to erase it and reformat it, or it goes bad and you have to put a new one in there, then all you do is reverse that process. And you put that copy that's on that external drive back onto your internal drive, and you're back in business. This has actually happened to me once or twice, and it's a nice fast way to recover from a hard drive failure in particular.
Yeah.
The codicil there is that you need to make sure you make that clone regularly, so that you know, when you're cloning back onto a new hard drive, for example, you're not bringing back 6 months old a 6 months old image of your hard drive, but you've got you're up to date. But you know, folks at home, if I do it every couple weeks. If you do it, you know, every month, you're probably fine. If you do it every week, you ought to get a gold star. And some of the software, you can also set it to, to be constantly cloning. Now, the alternative to that is, again, I think an external drive makes a lot of sense because you get a lot of bang space for the money that you spend on it these days. You know, it's not... But big drives just aren't that expensive anymore, big external drives. And the alternative is to get, instead of just plain cloning software, as I've been talking about, is to get some backup software that does more fancy tricks than just copying your internal drive to your external drive. You know, backup software can sit there and compare files and constantly update them. You know, so if you change a file on your internal drive, then it changes the file on your external drive to reflect that. A lot of times you can set them to do it automatically when you're asleep, for example, if you leave your computer on, so that it doesn't get in your way when you're trying to do things with your computer, which, you know, it probably wouldn't do anyway, but it never hurts to have all the resources you can. Or you can set it to just be doing it constantly in the background, for example. And in as powerful as modern computers are, you generally don't notice that.
Yeah. And I think that on the computer honeydew list, that should be maybe at the top of the honeydews.
It's the old saying is, and I think that there's some truth into it. There's some truth in it. And the old saying is that there are only two kinds of people: people that have had to reformat their hard drive, and people that are going to have to do it. So you want to, you kind of ought to approach it in that way. And when you think about all the things we keep on computers now, photos and movies and all music, all kinds of things that we really don't want to lose, it is a good idea to have a backup. I don't think you need to go overboard. I think for most folks, if you get that external drive and it's big enough to take everything that's on your internal drive and you just clone it, you're ahead of the game.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is science and technology reporter Greg Klein. He works for the News Gazette. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions about computers. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana. Good afternoon. Line one, hi.
Hi, I'm calling with another question about the external drive.
Uh-huh.
You just said that do you have to have software in addition to the external drive in order to back up your files?
Well, if you want to clone your whole drive, ma'am, then you really kind of need to do that. Because there are a lot of hidden files, so to speak, on your computer, right? So even if you drag all the folders over there, for example, to copy everything that you've got on your internal drive, you might not get a complete copy of your system. So having that piece of software makes that process easier. There are ways to go about it, but it's a lot more burdensome and complicated. Whereas the software, some of which you can get for free, right? There are good ghosting titles, or not ghosting, we'll say cloning, good cloning titles that don't even cost you anything, right? Like I said, on the Mac, Carbon Copy Cloner, that's free, and there are some of these for Windows as well.
I think I just wanted to know, because I just purchased an external hard drive,
uh-huh.
And there's very little information as far as directions with it.
Right.
But... It appears to have copied all the files. Now,
ma'am, you may have some drives now come ready to be a backup drive, right? And they may come with software installed on them that will do that. So in that case, you might not need any more software.
Right. The problem is, does one know one has software or not? And it seems like a mystery box, this backup.
You plugged it in and it copied your stuff.
That's right.
See, and do you know the brand and the name of it?
Yeah, I do.
What is that?
Oh, Maxor.
Uh-huh. And did it have like, Maxor One Touch or something like that?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Well, see, that drive is set up to be a backup drive. And I believe you probably plugged it in and turned it on, and the first thing it did was back up your computer.
Right.
So
right.
It's all set up to do that. Now, you may want to explore it a little further and figure out, if there are settings you want to modify and that kind of thing,
right.
Or you can just set it, let it do its business.
Okay, then after I got it, my computer was still running slowly, and so it was advised that I get Ad Aware and clean out all these corrupted files. And so I did that. But now how can I find out if those corrupted files were already saved to the Maxor?
Well, if you plugged in the backup drive before you did this operation with AdAware,
right?
It's highly likely that they are. Okay,
it just
made a copy of what you had on your computer, and that's why you may want to explore the software that did come with that drive a little more, and make sure that it's making fresh copies. Because then it'll reflect those changes that you made.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk with Greg Klein. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Well, something else that you suggested we talk about this afternoon is the Windows XP service pack, the latest one there, and it is number 3.
Yes, more service pack news. So it may even been today, or if it's not today, then very shortly Microsoft is to make Windows XP Service Pack 3, SP3, available. And not unlike Vista Service Pack 1, and it doesn't really do anything new. In fact, it does even less new than Vista Service Pack 1. What it does do is collect all the updates that Microsoft has issued over the life of Windows XP, which is supposed to end this summer. It collects them all in one place, and so you can bring yourself up to date. Again, if you've been semi-religious about updating Windows XP, if you use it, you probably don't need to worry about this. But if you haven't, here's an easy way to either get it online or to get a CD, and if you're going to keep using your XP computer for a while, which a lot of people are leaning toward doing, given the problems with Vista, then this gets you up to date as far as how the system operates, and more importantly, the security fixes that they've issued over time. And again, it'll come in automatically if you've got Windows Update going. And if not, you can go out and get it, or you can get a hold of Microsoft and get a CD.
Yeah. This one sounds like this would be a really good idea to get a CD in this case. If XP is going to go away.
Yeah. It probably wouldn't hurt. Although they're going to stop loading it into new computers, other than some, low-level stripped-down machines that like the one laptop per child, that are really that are made for a different purpose, they're still going to support it for a while. So I don't think that those updates will go away, this summer or anything like that. It'll probably be some years before that happens. But eventually, that will be the case. But I'd also imagine that by the time it goes away, you'll have a new computer and you won't be running Windows XP anymore. If you haven't kept up, though, it's a good idea, because XP had some security holes and they got fixed largely over time, to the point where I really think an updated version of XP is about as secure as Vista with all its supposed security enhancements.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Champaign on line 1. Hi.
Hello. I've been using computers for a long time, but I don't know very much about the hardware, and I'm thinking about getting a new new laptop, and I wanted an Apple, and I was wondering where would the best place to go to buy one and actually get hands-on, you know, education about it. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
All right. Well, I assume the caller, you know, she's been using computers for years, so she's probably been using a Windows machine. And so she's going to have to learn some new things, although it's not going to be entirely unfamiliar to her. What I tell people who ask me, you know, thinking maybe they're going to switch to an Apple or switch to Linux, for example, is look, that's fine. If you want to, you know, spend a little time poking around, you shouldn't have any problem figuring out what's what. You need to, if you're going to use it for work and you've got interface with the 90-some% of the world that uses Windows, you know, you might want to think about that and make sure that you can that you can connect to an office network easily, for example. I mean, office in a business sense, not Microsoft Office. For example, you know, talk to the information technology support people there. And, you know, make sure that it all work out for you. But otherwise, it shouldn't be a big problem. Now, I'm not in the business of advertising for anybody, but the caller asked, and, you know, Apple has its own stores, okay? And you could certainly probably buy all the Apple machines that you want from those stores. Now, the other thing, the reason those stores have, I think, been wildly popular beyond what pundits ever thought they would be, they have there is genius bars, okay? Whether the people that work at those genius bars are really geniuses, I don't know. But they are people that know a lot about Apple computers, and they're there every day. And you could take your computer there, and they'll help you with it. And at the big stores, like the one in Chicago, they often have theaters where they have people there all day giving presentations about how to use the software on the machine and that kind of thing. So you can get a lot of help in that way. If you're a book person, and I myself am a book person, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that every time I get a new version of an operating system, I go out and I buy the Four Dummies book and for that new version of the operating system. And I buy, as long as it's available, and almost always is, what's called the Missing Manual series from the computer publisher O'Reilly. You know, and basically what that does is replace that manual you used to get when you bought a computer that you just don't get anymore. And usually it's a lot more interesting, written in a lot more interesting fashion and maybe informative than those old manuals were anyway. So those are good ways to go about it.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. When you download that update for XP, what you want to do is either save it to your external hard drive or burn it to a CD. You don't need to get another CD.
Well, that's fine, and that's certainly a good suggestion and a great option, as long as you got a nice fast internet connection and you don't mind that big download. So,
well, most of us do today.
Yeah, yep, pretty much.
The other thing is, if you're
I'm still stuck in those dial-up days.
Yeah.
Not at home, not personally, but you know, my mindset is still stuck in those dial-up days.
The other thing is, if you're backing up and you're not removing that backup drive from the premises, you really haven't bought much security. You need to store the backup, the external drive, somewhere other than in your home or at the building that your computer's in.
Well, that would be the very cautious thing to do, and you're also right there.
That's the sensible thing to do, because if you're doing a business on that computer in particular, what is it, something like 90% of the businesses that lose their computers are out of business a year later?
Right, right.
So anyway.
Yeah.
They're cheap enough, you can do it today.
That's right. It's a good practice to particularly if you're running a business on it. I think for most home users, it's probably kind of overkill. But you know, you might say, "Well, I've got all these pictures and music and that kind of thing." But and if I have a fire, I ought to have it offsite. And you're right. Yeah, it'd be nice. But let's face it, you didn't have your paper pictures and your CDs and all of that stuff offsite. So you know, it's not much different. But if you've got a place to put it, you know, if you've got a nice big safety deposit box. And you can get two external hard drives and kind of rotate them, copy one, put another one in your safety deposit box and use the second one. That's great. Yeah, all of that is great.
If you're a small business.
And if you're a business, yes, it's absolutely a good idea because your whole economy is based on that stuff. So.
Yeah. Hey, tomorrow is Earth Day, and I was wondering if you might have a tip or two in terms of our computers and how we could be a little greener.
Well, I don't know if you went, Celeste, to the electronics recycling event that they had here in Champaign County on Saturday. If you did, then as I did, you probably spent a long time
in
a line of cars because evidently we got a lot of people that were thinking in terms of recycling their old electronic equipment as opposed to just throwing it in the garbage can. So that's one thing you can do. And there are places in town, Max, which was kind of the contractor for that event on Saturday up on North Lincoln Avenue, is one. You know, and there are some other options for you. If it's a relatively recent computer that you're turning over, you might want to think about donating it to a place like PrairieNet, you know, the local community network here that kind of gets computers into the hands of people that wouldn't maybe
otherwise,
have them otherwise, or a school, depending, you know, if it's an up-to-date machine. One of the things you can do is, you know, set your monitor to turn off when your computer's been sitting there idle for a while, because that's the big big user of energy in your computing system, and that has the advantage of being, you know, kind of environmentally friendly as well as saving you some money
right.
on electricity bills.
Yeah. So just have it go dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we can wrap it up here. We took care of all our callers.
Good.
So thank you very much.
Good. It's my pleasure. I might add just one more thing real fast.
Okay.
That pertains to backup. You know, if you're backing up to an external hard drive and you're backing up your whole drive, that's great. You got a copy of that. And if you do that weekly or biweekly or monthly, that's great. But, you know, you should have, I think, kind of an integrated backup strategy, so to speak. And I don't just clone my hard drive every couple of weeks. You know, when I'm working on something that would be painful to lose, you know, everybody's got or should have little USB thumb drive these days. And that's a great place to hold those individual things you may be working on. If you want something that will be even more stable and archival in nature, then, you know, we've all got CD burners and most of us have DVD burners anymore. And those are great places to store another copy of your pictures that you don't want to lose and that kind of thing. So if you kind of approach this, in a multi-layered fashion like that, I think you're pretty well protected, even if you don't move your external hard drive off-site.
Greg Klein is a science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, and this is a program we call Computers in You, and we do it on the third Monday of the month. Next month, the month of May, Peter Kimball will be with us. Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you, Celeste.